Well, I was just saying, Chris, that I think that this podcast is going to be shorter than the on-ramp that we just had today.
That's okay. That's okay. It was I was more than happy to flow through that convo. More than happy. So if we end up doing a shorter podcast, no biggie. No biggie
I'm good with it too, but I'm being selfish about that
at all.
because the on-ramp was heavy this week, because a lot has happened this week. There's been a lot to think about. Anyway, so it was good to have it because probably the on-ramp we would have not had enough time, but yeah, I'm okay with that too. It's always good, like you said, that we get together kind of at this time every week to do the podcast. But we don't really, if we just jump into the podcast, we don't have time to talk about all the other cool things that have happened during the week. The stuff, it's the how do I want to say this? It's like the secret decoded podcast stuff. So it's like there's the decoded on-ramp, which we talk about education and how it works, and then there's the stuff that we provide out to the world that's decoded, but not in the same way, because there's different layers of breaking things down in education, right? Last night when I was out for a walk, I thought to myself, I really wish that over my 17-year career so far, that I would have re recorded some of the wild stuff that's happened in my work. I really wish that those stories, like they live here in my mind, which is fine. But the mind has a funny way of manipulating stories and making them juicier and much better, right? And as time goes on, you only remember the key moments and not the context that goes with those stories that are so important. That's what happened last night. As I'm walking, I'm listening to a podcast. And I was having a very hard time just sticking to the podcast. My mind was wandering, and I was like, darn, I should have been recording all that stuff because it just, there's so much that I would like at the end of my career to be able to say, this is what education looked like for me in a public schools in Ontario. This is what it looked like. This is what I had to contend with outside of actually sitting with kids and teaching them and having them learn things. You ever feel that vibe?
All the time. All the time. It's you make me think of a couple different things with that comment. I struggle with, yet totally love writing about my thinking and my experiences in education, in life too. I got to be honest. I like, if I make it really simple, I would say the journaling. I love the journaling element. One of the things I've gotten better at is going back and reading some of my journals. So here's my challenges within journaling. I tend to externalize a lot of it. Like I really love the in the moment conversations and wrestling through the challenge of like, what the heck are we even talking about here? Like that moment of discovery that sort of extends off of inspiration. So, same thing. Like I so many times in listening to podcasts or reading a book, I'll be writing in the margins or I'll write on a scrap piece of paper something that, fascinates me. And I realize that it only comes to life when I can sort of get into the mix like this, where I'm talking with a colleague or talking with a friend, and you get to kind of play with the information. So whatever interests you ultimately isn't the heart of what fascinates you long term. You need to sort of take that seed moment, share it with someone, and bounce it off, and kind of like, what does this look like from someone else's POV? Am I totally crazy? Is this your experience? Is it just my experience? And I think that's what stories do. I think that's the heart of stories. I think in a lot of ways, in EDU, I find that with students, and I don't know if you've noticed this, with students, we're constantly making those life connections with classroom in order to, let's say, make the lesson pop. But I find sometimes when we get with colleagues, we're less tolerant of that. we're less tolerant of sort of using the story to illuminate an idea or an experiment, a method. When I talk with colleagues, it tends to be more about, you know, how was your weekend? What are you doing for summer? Like, it's the stuff that escapes EDU. And ultimately, what's cool for me is when those moments, even in those moments, I hate to say it, where I kind of think to myself, oh, what they're doing there in their life, though I get it, that's really cool. I can see how I can, that informs not only me in my life. Yeah, I should totally be going to Wonderland more. But I like the moments where it also challenges my thinking about my job. So even this morning, you know, our on-ramp, this is the second thing you made me think about, is that our on-ramp strikes me like, I wish there was a way that we could somehow capture both parts of it, the on-ramp and this one, which is completely outward facing, so that we could decide at some point, because you're right, the on-ramp, we're using a very public tool for a conversation, not much different than you and I talking, let's say, on our mobile phones or on the phone, which we have the assumed anonymity of you and I only talking together. I get it. You and I using Google Live to chat like a phone. I'm sure that data is being captured somewhere. They'd be able to say, oh, this IP address, talk to this IP address, must be Chidiac, must be Clef. The holistic content, though, isn't captured until we hit record. I wish we could get both, because it's almost like creating these Easter eggs. Because there is, today, there was a whole episode in just our conversation about job change, about what it means to sort of create opportunity for yourself. I think there's a really cool blend of what is our sort of philosophy of setting up success for selves, but also a little bit of like a instruction manual there. If you're a teacher, like, hey, teacher, if you're thinking about creating change in your world, here's some heads up stuff. It's part of the conversations that back in the day when On-Ed Mentors was beginning, that was part of what was the brilliance of it, was being able to kind of open up some of those ideas to individuals that aren't even in the business yet. They're not even in the classroom yet. Now, the truth of it is, I think what you and I talked about this morning, it's kind of like, it's a signpost on the highway, but the truth of it is, no first year teacher is going to be moving. They're not going on that off ramp yet. So to give them a heads up that, you know, here's how you build relationships, here's how you sort of present yourself, here's how you do an interview. I think you and I were sort of talking, you got to be into your career a little bit. So I like that idea. So that and the third thing, long term, I love the idea of having my career chronologized. I like that. I'm going to be able to go back and listen to our conversations. One of the ironies in the conversations, though, and someone else checked me on this in another space when they asked me to go back and listen to it. I said, I don't, but it's interesting. You call me out on one of the individuals that I spoke to, and I will tell you exactly what slammed me from that. Like, if we go back and start calling out some of the titles of our things, like I will never forget Bag of Work. I will never, ever forget Bag of Work. And there's episodes that are just boom. I can remember exactly our flow in it and what we led to and that aha moment of, yeah, man, that is so teacher. So that's what I like, that idea of having, even if we're not giving all the Easter eggs, which is the on-ramp and sometimes the off-ramp, and I think that at some point it's still, you know, I'm going to believe at some small percentage, if there's a new teacher or a seasoned teacher listening to the podcast, they're going to be nodding their head. We might be giving away a few little gems of, I'm going to try that. I mean, it's not as if we're not selling strategies. We're not pushing strategies on this. It's just, as we said from the beginning, decoding the week. So it will be interesting if I ever have the opportunity. I've had a few people come up and say, oh, hey, you're doing a different podcast now. And I've stopped short of saying, yeah, what are your thoughts? They've just called it out. So I don't know. That was really long. I took up a lot of chunk in that one too.
Hey, no worries about that. Yeah. I basically took the whole on-ramp. you kicked it off and then I just took over. You know, you call them Easter eggs, right? And some of it, what I like about the on-ramp is that real talk. Not that this isn't, but it's like, for anybody who's listening, it's like, envision this. A colleague comes into your classroom to ask you a question, and you're surrounded by your students who are doing whatever. They may be on the carpet being instructed by you or guided by you, or they may be around the room doing their thing. But a visitor comes in the room, we acknowledge the visitor, and then the visitor might have questions for me or somebody else in the room. And you're not going to get an unfiltered straight talk because it's not appropriate. But that same teacher asks you the same question in the staff room where you're sitting in a corner, you can have more of a talk that is, I don't want to say free because it's not the right word. It's like maybe it won't be as edited in the filter before it comes out. And it's just appropriateness. Like, there are things you shouldn't say around children. There are things that the children don't need to know. So the conversation that we have, the on-ramp, like today, holy cow, it was about, you know, it was about career advancement. It was about leadership. It was about watching your back, but also stepping forward and leading. Like, there was a lot going on there. And
it's, you know what it reminded me of? You've had these moments, and anyone listening has had these moments. Someone walks into your classroom, they do a quick survey of the class, and they close the door. They walk in and they just kind of like, and you know, when they close the door in that moment, even now I'm just getting like, I'm getting the feels about like, okay, this is going to be good. This is going to be good because, and it's the, you have a high suspicion that it's not about you. They need to sort of like talk to you about something. Well, you got that, eh? Just the door kind of closes and it only works if you're kind of immersed in what you're doing. So busy, and you kind of do this, you look up and the person's standing in the doorway and you still feel like this could be work related. It could be, and it sometimes is even before you say your hello and you look up and they sort of say something like, I just want to close the door for a second. And then your interest is piqued. That's what the on-ramp is like. It's just the door, and let's have a quick sort of like go at this before the kids are going to come screaming back into the classroom, right? It's like, crap, okay, we got about 10 minutes. They're on recess. Let's do this. What do you want to talk about? That's how I feel about the on-ramp.
Now that you say that, it's like, yeah, you're right. We close the door. We have the on-ramp. And then when I hit broadcast, we open the door up and we're like, come on in. We're ready to talk. We're ready to
have. Which can still be coded. It can still be coded. But I think in all honesty, we get pretty close. We're still, it's like the, hate to say it, but there is an element of this podcast that is, it has to dance with our professional lives. So the truth of it is the frame or the method or the code switching that we do. We talked about that way back in the day. The code switching is that we're still talking as teachers. We talk, let's say that percentage, that code switching moves a little bit more to dads and employees and kind of like hanging out. And then the sort of the teacher lens kind of pops up. It's like talking in front of your kids, talking in front of your old children, and you're sort of trying to work it out with your spouse. Are we actually going for ice cream tonight? And at some point you can spell it out and the kids don't know what you're talking about. And then, you know, you have to change your code. You have to code switch differently when your one kid said, did you just spell out ice cream? I'm like, oh, I did. Awesome.
I do agree it'd be kind of cool to be able to capture the on-ramp, the talk when the door's closed. I wish we could grab that and we could archive that too. But that just becomes dangerous, right? I know. That becomes dangerous because we are professionals, right? We both are professionals. We both have a duty around different things, and we have to maintain that professionalism. We have to meet those duties 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Now, let me say, I don't think we've said anything in the on ramp or off ramp that is like that would get us into professional trouble. I really don't.
Nope.
But still, you know, you don't want to be. It happens all the time. On ramp and off ramp talks with the door closed happen all the time. So if I'm walking down the hall and I go to go into my colleague's classroom and I see that the door is closed and that there's two other people in there, I stop and think before I enter. Either I'm going in and I know this conversation in there is going to be derailed for a minute, but I need to know something, or like, oh, it can wait. They're having an off-ramp moment, on-ramp moment. I'll come back later. Everybody knows that. So it's not like us talking about closing the door is a bad thing. It happens all the time, every day. For example, yesterday I wanted to go talk to my principal. I tried three times. All three times the door was closed. Well, I know I'm not bumping in there, no matter what it's for, unless literally, oh, I guess if there's a student that is like medical emergency, yeah, I'm opening the door. I'll knock, open, say, I'm sorry, this is happening. We need you now. But if that's not the case, I know that the door's closed. There's an on-ramp or off-ramp conversation happening in there. They obviously don't want the whole other world to hear about it. So the door's closed. It happens all the time. It's normal. It's natural, right? So I like the idea of kind of capturing it. I don't really know if I want to do that, but the big picture of capturing what happens day to day in education, I think would be a valuable pursuit because, I mean, just for the sheer fact that you could laugh for days reading about some of our stories, just days, would be amazing. I mean, I can't even believe some of the things that I've seen and heard and been part of working in a school. I feel like I want to start telling stories, but I'm not going to. But there are some stories that parents might shake their head and say, that happened? That happens in elementary school? Yeah, it happens. And they might wonder, why didn't my child tell me about it? And then that's the part. That's the part that boggles minds everywhere, right? Because sometimes even my kids will come home and tell me something and I'll be like, that didn't happen. And they're like, yeah, Dad, it did. How could you not believe that that happened? Dad, you've told better stories than that one. You know, like last night we were out for dinner and my youngest was getting upset with my wife and I because we were talking shop from the minute we got in the car to go for dinner because, as you know, a lot's happened this week and a lot happened yesterday. So, you know, I had to tell my wife, I'm like, this happened, then this happened. You'll never believe what this person said. And then this happened. So we're sitting in the restaurant and we're getting ready to eat. And my youngest is like, okay, you two are done. Like this, you've been talking about work since we got in the car to go for dinner. I want to talk now. And we're like, fair enough. What do you want to talk about? So he tells us a story which his older brother can corroborate, a funny story about the principal and another student. And my wife and I both know our son's principal. He's a really good guy, down to earth, great guy, loves my kids, which for everybody, for the one person listening, is the most important thing for me, that my kid's administrator likes my kids. That's yeah. important for me. Yeah. So he likes our kids. And we're hearing this story. My wife and I are dying because we're visualizing what our kids are telling us about this man and what he had to do with this kid. And we're just dying. So the kids have them too. Like if my kids could record some of the things that they've seen their administrator do or seen their teacher do, it just blows your mind. Mm-hmm. Like, and maybe I'm off. Maybe people out there know what's happening in school. Maybe people know that sometimes you have to evacuate a room if there's a situation in the room. Maybe they know that sometimes certain students have to leave the room because they're, you know, wrecking the vibe or they've lost complete control of who they are and they need to reset. I don't know if people know that or not, but it happens. And as a classroom teacher, for me, the number one thing as a classroom teacher that I read in the Education Act that freaks me out every morning when I go to work. And I don't remember exactly how it said. So for all you law-abiding people out there who are going to check out the Education Act, there is something around the duty of a teacher and that the teacher has to maintain control of their classroom environment. There has to be the leader of the ship. And that scares me. It scares me because there have been years where the students try to run the class at all cost. And you can't have that because there's one teacher and there's, in my case, 26 kids, and you can't have 26 different leaders that are trying to take over the way that the class flows. You can't have that. It says in the Education Act, I'm the one who's supposed to be the leader of that. And it always scares me, the law and order. I call it the law and order statement, that I have to maintain control. And, you know, all the progressives will argue with me and tell me that all 26 of my kids are leaders and they should all have control, blah, 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 blah. But what I'm telling you is, if I'm the classroom teacher, I need to make sure that my stuff's in order, my room is in order, and my students know that ultimately I'm leading, and I'd be more than happy to provide them with opportunities and for them to take over in ways that are agreed upon. But sometimes that law and order is threatened, and it's threatened in a way that is not pro-social. It's threatened in a way that can cause harm to other people, including the person who's trying to do whatever it is they're trying to do. Sometimes it's physical harm. Sometimes it's mental and emotional harm. I don't know if people know that this happens. They must. I mean, if you work with people, it's something that happens like in social settings. You know, sometimes there's someone who's trying to light a firecracker to get things going. Sometimes there are people who are silently trying to sabotage what's happening in any situation. This is life. And it happens in a classroom because a classroom is a mini community of what's really out there. So really cool stuff. And I would love a podcast about that, but I'm not doing it. I'm not going to put myself out there with some of these stories because I fear that it might be used against me in a way my intention is not to put it out there as like a negative. My intention is to put it out there like this is the society, the mini society happening every day in classrooms all over the world. It's not even just here, it's everywhere. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because if you want me to add, let me add like a cultural global perspective. At the school I'm at, I've had more newcomers enter into my classroom community than I think ever before. You know, from the Philippines, from the Middle East. And it's awesome to get their perspective of our classroom community and how it works. And what's been interesting is that I've learned that even though I believe that my classroom has like a law and order, I'm always told by these students that my classroom's easygoing and very light. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And then once they start to explain, I'm like, oh. So they come here, and even with the freedoms that we have in our country, those freedoms extend into the classroom. And the kids tell me, like, you have given me a freedom that I've never seen before. Mm-hmm. I'm like, hold on, what are you talking about here? Like, let's give me some context for me to wrap my brain around this. And then they'll explain what happened at their school in the country that they've come from. A good example, I have students in my class that have needs that are different than other people. They learn differently. They've been brought up in environments that have not established within them like turn-taking and just basic like respect principles and stuff like that. So they come off strong and they come off inappropriate, but it's all contextual. So last year, I had one of my students was having a bit of a hard time in the room and was acting in a way that was just very negative, and I needed some way to lighten the atmosphere. So I looked at one of my new students from the Middle East and I said, okay, so like this happens in your old school. What happens next? And he said, do you really want to know? And I said, well, dude, we can either focus on what's happening right here, which I'm trying to help this one student, but I can't help the, you know, 31 other kids witnessing what's happening, because that's what's happening. So I need some humor here. So I go for the humor. And the kid says, let me tell you what would have happened at my last school if this occurred in my classroom. And then as he's talking, everybody starts listening to him. And they can't believe, to them, it sounds horrible what would happen to this student in the Middle East, in a particular country, around a particular context, if this were to occur. Even the student who was having a hard time stopped and started listening because he's like, that's what would happen to me if I were there? He's like, that's exactly what happened to you. And we're all like, come on. He's like, I've witnessed it. I've seen it. And for everybody listening, for the one person listening, it's not horrible. It's just over there, there's more freedom for the teacher to discipline this. Well, punish the child, not discipline the child, punish the child.
And just to jump in, sorry, it's also not country specific. It's just that it's that aha moment. Like, we could get swept up in our EDU silo. Like, what we're doing is ubiquitous, is everywhere. But I've been in those same conversations where even small nuances, not like it actually, I'm going to dance with you for a bit. It tends, the most glaring differences do come around the freedom piece. And there are jurisdictions in the world where the students have zero freedom. It is very much the, like what we observe as being old learning row on row. That's about as far into the, so when I think often when we think about row on row learning, we see that as a old style of learning. And also we don't spend a lot of time, I think, pulling apart or decoding. If you have row on row learning, then you also have row on row thinking. And if you have row on row thinking, it is easier to make it more industrialized, as in you walk in, you sit down, that is your space, get out your tools, produce a thing, put it back in your desk, clock out, leave. And when autonomy is pulled and individuality is pulled out of education, or let's say even in the workforce, you really are entirely governed by the rules. Our modern learning kind of ideas say that, well, we're going to create, as you said, appropriate and informed and balanced opportunities for leadership and learning and exploration and creativity. But I've had students say, like, that doesn't feel safe for them. It doesn't feel safe. They're like, wow, like, I don't know what to do with this. And they sometimes, because of the lack of an on-ramp for them, sometimes students whose experience from a different jurisdiction does not mirror what they're being given in, let's say, my school board, their behavior doesn't match up with expectations. We have students that understand learning stations and collaborative work, that it isn't just like your table is your table because you happen to sit there, not because you are student number 22 and you need to sit in desk number 22. And I've had other students kind of address also, there are school spaces, learning spaces, where it's downright kind of militant, and you are heavily sanctioned if you sort of step kind of out of step with what the kind of rote discipline is, and the ideas of disrespect and the ideas of revolution in the classroom might be. And I've had students say, yeah, like this, I'd get the switch. I'd get the switch. Like if I, you don't speak back, you don't give an idea other than what's asked of you. There's a whole other, I've stopped assuming that the North American model, and I don't know, I just feel like I have to say the words, the North American model is not the world model. It is not at all. Sorry to jump on your thing there, but I share that experience, man. Totally share that experience.
Yeah, no. As you say it, I see it. Like these kids are like, this would never fly. Like, you're way too nice. You're way too easy. And I'm like, oh, really? I wonder what the kids here that live down the street think. They don't think that at all, right? Like, and even in my building, there are educators who I find are stricter than me, if that's the right word. But yeah, it's really interesting, isn't it? What a perspective. Like, it's been such a gift to have these kids in my class, all of them, the ones that are trying to run the show and the ones that are teaching me about other cultures. And, you know, it's funny because they'll look at me as a Middle Eastern, of Middle Eastern descent. They'll be like, well, you understand, don't you? And I'm like, I don't, because I've never lived in the Middle East. I've only ever gone to school here. So it's just funny because they automatically assume. First they come in, they see me, they tell me this. First they come in, they see me, and they're like, uh-oh, this is going to be just like home. And then they think, this is why I've been placed in this room, because he's Arab. They've told me this, which is really cool, because I've never had this conversation with my administrator. So I think I'm going to, because I'd love for her to hear this perspective. So first thing they tell me is, when I came and they told us who the teacher was, we were worried. Well, the kid was worried, not the parents. The parents were relieved. Then they meet me and they're like, oh my God, he's Middle Eastern. I'm really screwed. Like, it's going to be like the old country. Number three, they're totally thrown off because my initial kindness, they assume, is just a facade. But it continues. Like, my way of operating, believing that everybody should succeed, believing that everybody should have a chance, they just think that that's window dressing. So then they're thrown off by that. So for these poor kids, they get here from another country and they're hit over the head three or four more times by me and my classroom community because of their preconceived notions, right? Because of the baggage that they bring with them. And I tell them all the time, I need to be a little bit harder, right? Because as I continue to teach older students, I'm finding that they're becoming more independent, right? They're questioning more things. They're totally questioning authority and how that works and how they can grab some of that and be part of that process or that conversation. This is my learning, having come from primary into junior and working my way up in the junior ranks, which then brings me to intermediate. I have no interest in teaching intermediate. That's no secret. Many of my colleagues know that. And one of the reasons is because of the development of the kids. Like, it's not where I want to be. I don't feel like my gifts are there, which is funny because you and I talked about in the on-ramp, we talked, and I'm going to give this one away because I think I can, but we talked about leadership and principles and how they're the ones who make decisions about how the school will go and they try to implement their vision. You know, we like them to have a shared vision with us because everybody's there, but that's not necessarily the way it goes. So it's funny because when you said to me, hey, the principal might think you're doing a wonderful job in the position you're currently in, or they might think, I don't think that guy works well there. I think that guy works better in this environment. And then they shift you to somewhere where you have no interest, not even open to that idea. And then it makes me think, what's best for the school? Is it best for the school for one person to decide where a particular educator should go, even though they don't have any interest in going there? Or is it best for the educator to say, or the teacher to say to the principal, listen, I get your perspective, why you think I would do well here, but I'm telling you right now, I feel no motivation to give my all there. So by putting me there, and I'm telling you that that's not an interest, how is that better for the school? There you go again. Now you have this back and forth, but it's not a fair back and forth. You and I have talked about this before. It's not, there is not an equal power there. one person has more power than the other. So really, it's a back and forth like this. You have one person up here who has the say, and you have one person here. It's not like this. It may appear, and you and I talked about this, that this is an appearance. But when you dig down, this is really what it is. Let's not make any mistake about that. And so this person's saying, no, no, no. This person's saying, yes, yes, yes. Good for the school. Good for the school. This person's like, I'm telling you, it's not good for the school. I don't know how it could be because I'm telling you, I feel no motivation. That's not an interest of mine. And I get that this person has to staff the school. I get that. And I get that sometimes this person might not be effective where they are, even though they think they're being effective. So there's lots going on there. It's very layered. It's very complex, but this is what we're dealing with. This is it. So I don't know, Chris, if you'll have to tell me, am I coming off negative? Am I coming off just realistic? I don't know. And I guess it's whoever's ears this is landing in, mm-hmm. they'll take what they get from it, and they'll decide how I'm kind of working through this. But this is I've met many people who don't understand this. They think they can go in, and once they go into the office to talk, it's this. It's not that. It's like in a classroom. It's like in a classroom. I go in every day, and I try to show my students that this is what can be. But when it hits the fan, it's not like this. It's like this, and this is me, and this is them. It has to be. The Education Act says I'm supposed to have control of the classroom environment that I'm in. I'm supposed to maintain order. So this is good when the learning's great and everybody's interested, but when this is causing problems, this needs to come up here like this. Oh, it's funny that I'm using my hands and I'm doing all these things with my hands, but if you're listening to the audio, you have no clue what I'm doing with my hands.
So we do the plug then. Check us out on YouTube, because this one is. Check out Decoded. There's the bumper. Check out Decoded on YouTube, because you get to see the smiling faces, the half awake faces. I love the visual works. It reminds me too, like when my son did a few podcasts back on Chasing Squirrels, and he'd be talking, and that was just pure audio, and I'd be laughing. I'm like, buddy, you got to put into the voice. Explain what your hands are doing. No one can see your hands in the air. So, in that chance, it didn't play out. But I like the. It's. I think there's another. I think there's another faction that will be listening to this podcast, and they'll also say to themselves, "I'd never even thought of that before." And you think about that moment. So we're talking about teachers. Let's say the teachers listening to the podcast and say, "I never thought about the sort of the power dynamic that way," and that exact statement is very similar to what your students might feel, because the opportunities are opened up so sweetly and in a sort of customized fashion that they're stepping in and doing things that they believe are genuine opportunities for them. The one little challenge there is, how do you get them to see outside that bubble? And I think that's where, so if you have a bunch of students that are sort of existing in that, whatever that hierarchy is, they're understanding that you're the teacher, but you're kind and you're allowing them to do things that they never thought they could do before or would maybe be permitted to do before. How does that moment of, I get it, there's a leader in the room, but I feel like I have the freedom to express. I think that was that safe space that you and I were talking about in the on-ramp, because as a teacher, that moment should be very similar. There will be individuals listening to this podcast that have never thought about the power dynamic and sort of navigating teaching other than coming in and being in their classroom, which is entirely fine. That is entirely fine. I think there's the other individuals too that want to understand the system at large. And if you decide to move into that space, then you are having conversations like what you and I are having this morning, kind of pulling it apart a little bit, seeing where the frayed ends are, seeing what can be stitched back together, but also kind of honestly addressing these things do happen in education, much they do in a lot of, if you got a job, this happens in a job. Like this is the work. This and the politics and bureaucracy of this is not specific to education. I think often we believe that it's somehow more pristine and it doesn't happen like things just kind of go smooth because it's a social institution, it's publicly funded. You went back to the other space, you say, I wonder what people actually, how they perceive it. There is, I do believe, there is a ivory tower element to what education is. And I think for better or for worse, sometimes it either sets up an expectation that can't be satisfied, or it kind of keeps you from really connecting with some of the cool stories, like what you're talking about out at dinner. I know my kids are probably tired of my spouses and my, school conversations. But they've been in the same space, them telling stories about school as well. And when you really listen, you realize that despite the fact I'm in a school and I'm in my kids' school a lot, I don't see some of these stories that they see. So I love their perspective. I love my kids' perspective on it, you know, because I may have a totally separate story, which is, it's from the same trilogy, but it's a totally different novel. You know, like you get into these good three-part trilogies and the origin story from the first novel is told from a different perspective and it just cracks open the whole idea. So I love that. I love that. My kids do that too. When my spouse and I finally take off the teacher hat and say, okay, kids, how was your day? And it's funny because you have to almost stop them from answering like students. Do you find that? Your kids sometimes will answer you like they're a student and you almost like you're thinking like, no, sorry. I'm dad now. Tell it to me like I'm dad. And then you almost have to give them the permission. Hey, if we bring it back to close the door and say, okay, here's what I saw happening, dad. They're not talking to you because it's easy to trigger your own kids and make them think like they're talking to a teacher. I'm constantly aware of that. And you need to sort of pull down those blinders so that they answer honestly, right?
Yep.
Yeah. In much the same way, let's say good leadership needs, not good leadership, leadership, one of the skills would be, how do you sort of dress down the two positional power structures of being a teacher and a, let's say, an administrator, and be able to speak to each other what feels like eye to eye, ear to ear. So when my kids tell school stories, I want to hear them through the eyes of my own kid, not like they're a student in Mrs. X classroom. So I didn't even get to mention the thing I want to talk about today. And I feel like we're getting to the end of it. Can I throw it to you just as something I've been pretty challenged by this week?
Do it.
Giving advice. I'm going to start there. Giving advice and feeling like I'm hitting some moments lately where I just don't know what to say. Like I honestly don't know what to say. And I have to pull back from my teacher hat, like somehow I have the answer or I can help you find the answer. And this is what I've been really reflective this week. What happens in those spaces? What am I doing in those spaces where I really don't know what to say? And what do I do when that happens? Do I catch myself and sort of say, I don't know what to say? Do I try and create a, give me a moment here, I'll figure it out? Do I redirect them and say, I'm not the person to talk to about this anymore? But I'm having a few moments like that where I'm more than happy to talk out an issue, but I'm finding it difficult when I feel like I don't have something new to contribute to it. And that's been this past week a little bit. Do you give a lot of advice? Or do you even realize? Do we even realize when we're giving advice? Like, is it just so embedded in our day?
I think, number one, I think that coming to the realization that you don't know what to say, I think that's a big thing. I think that's big because then you're self-aware of like the situations that are occurring that you don't always have the answers. What kills me, a pet peeve of mine, is when people think they know everything. I hope, you know, there have been, do I give a lot of advice? I don't think I give a lot. Maybe I do, but when somebody comes to me and says, hey, this is my situation, what do you think? I might say, oh man, I've never had that situation, but this is where I might start. And I think, which is really cool, because then it takes you right back to your true values, what you value, what you believe is most important as your work as a teacher, which is kind of cool because it's reaffirming, right? It reminds me of why I got into the work. So there is a particular teacher that will ask me relatively often about things and what I might do. And the teachers asked me more in the past couple of years because they were newer before and they're not so new anymore. But they'll come and they'll say, this is what I'm seeing. This is what's happening. I'm not sure what to do. And I'll say, "What? Well, what have you done?" And then I listen. And then I say, well, it sounds like, and then I tell, and then I make a connection to something I've experienced or something I've heard or something I've read or something I've done. And then my advice would be what I think I would do if I were in the situation. And then I always acknowledge like the risks of what, like, you know, even within my thinking process, I say, well, what I'm telling you I do, it's really easy for me to say because I don't have to do it. If I had to do it, if I had to implement it, it would be different because then I would have to consider, you know, I'd have to consider administration and parents and peers. And when you do that, things get muddy and messy, right? Things get muddy and messy. So when I don't know, I'll say, yeah, I don't know, but if this was in my lap and I had to deal with it, this is where I think I would start because I have to start somewhere. And even if I wouldn't know where to start, this is who I would talk to first. This is who I would go to for advice. So maybe you might want to talk to them as well and get their perspective. And hey, listen, this morning on the on-ramp, I don't think I came out and said to you, I need your advice. I think I said, dude, let me tell you what I experienced. I think I may have said, I'd like your, tell me what you think or whatever. And the things you said hit home because some of what you said was sitting up there already. I just needed to have it come into my head from the outside and not from within. And so in our conversation, the advice you provided to me this morning, like it's now living because it's come from somewhere else. Whereas when it was just in, there's so much in my head, that's why I let it out. So I could get it out and I could get your perspective and get other people's perspective because you need that. If you're always inside, living inside your silo, right? You're always kind of like reliving the same mistakes, or you just don't ever get that rich experience from somebody else's silo. So did I even answer your question? Like, I think it's important to acknowledge the person. I don't know.
Yeah.
Because I think people who think they know everything, that's a warning sign for me. So I might say to the person, I don't know, but this is where I would start. And then sometimes they go away and they don't take any of my advice. They don't follow any of my path. That's okay. It's not their path, you know?
Yeah, it's it, you know, you did. I think that's a good context. I'm happy that I could sort of speak not around, but sort of speak to your experience. Like, I'm happy that the things I said landed. It wasn't sort of just kind of dusted off. Or somehow seemed like, I'm happy that I was speaking to your experience and not just taking over your experience. I think that's that sort of strange rub space with advice. And unsolicited or unasked for is that space that I'm in right now, where I think, you know, do I give more than I should? Should I wait for the opportunity? Is this person just speaking around me? They just need to sort of hear their words outside their head. So one of the things is I've taken to sort of asking, can I give my perspective on this? Can I share a story that you've reminded me of? And I just find that sometimes that's the little bit of that approval is important so that I know that I can check, am I actually in the conversation? I think I am. Like, are we in something? You know, it's that sort of that social check. Are we actually talking about something, or is it just the person needs to just share, which I don't always measure well. But it's interesting, as a second layer to that, I'm finding myself also at a loss for words. Like, I've had some scenarios the past 2 weeks where it's like your compulsion to help has to be checked because you actually don't have anything that you can do. Yeah, and that could be a bunch of different reasons. Just to give a really sort of generalized example is that a lot of the students that I work with have kind of specific plans as far as the courses they're working on, the behavior expectations, their sort of learning goals. There's a lot of customization in there. And I often think to myself that because a plan isn't working doesn't necessarily mean that you get rid of the plan. We just have to find a way to stick to that plan, because the risk is switch to a new plan and we haven't actually proven necessarily that plan one works or doesn't work. It's just not been used, or it's difficult, right? You have that, it's tough. So without falling back on old behaviors that created the plan in the first place, do we just try and stick to the plan? And I like being a creative thinker. I like drawing in multi-resources. I like reaching out and getting other people's opinions. I've come to appreciate all of those as tools to not only develop myself, but to help my students evolve and sort of see our classroom as connected to a broader school board. Because in our silo, it's easy for our kids to feel like myself and my colleague are the only resources that they have, right? It's a very small space. But I'm just this past couple weeks, I had a couple moments. I'm like, wow, I don't know what to say. I don't know how to respond. And these would be specific where I did feel like there was a question around, what do you think, Clef? What do you think? And I just had a couple moments this past week. I was like, wow, I actually don't have anything that I'm not really thinking right now. I don't have anything to share for the conversation. And I wasn't entirely comfortable with that. I got to be honest. I wasn't entirely comfortable with the fact that I didn't have anything to contribute. It was that teacher's hat. Like, I felt like I had to have something. You got to have something. It's like coming into the classroom and your hole punch and your pencils aren't there, which I know the pencil reference you can appreciate. I'm thinking back to, like, I think it was like episode 2, right? That's part of the setup. Yeah. I don't know if that's a good closer. It feels way too waggable on the tail end, but yeah, what do you do when you don't have anything to say? When you really do not have anything to say, do you try and dance, create something? Do you just sort of say, well, maybe you should talk to this person? I don't know, man.
Sounds like that's the homework.
Yeah. All right. Is it raining in your neighborhood?
It is raining.
Yeah, we got rain too.
But you know what? It's okay. I want to do some lawn work and I don't care if it's raining. I'm just going to go out there and I'm prepared to get soaked. So
yeah,
it's funny that this morning my son wants me to take him out for breakfast after we're done.
Yeah.
So I'm like, no problem. Let's do it. So I'll take him out for breakfast. Then when I get back, I'll just put on like just a t-shirt and shorts and go out there and work on the lawn. It'll be kind of fun. I kind of enjoy that work, so I don't care if it's raining. And then I'll probably go for a walk after I'm soaked, because you're already out there, so you might as well do something.
True.
Anyway, what are your I was going to ask you what your plans are, but I'm not going to do that because it's off-ramp material.
Mine's simple like yours. I got that to do. I think there's a birthday party this weekend.
You think? You don't even know?
It's Monday. It's on Monday. My boys got basketball this morning, so I get to go. I'm playing too, so I'm helping.
Oh, nice.
Get out on the courts a little bit. With the rain, I had thought about that too yesterday. We got takeout, but then we ate in the backyard, which was kind of sweet. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, yeah, I should probably do something with this back lawn. as I'm looking at, like, the dandelions this year are tall, man. Like, they're big and they're pot like 2 feet tall. These are like splendid versions of these dandelions. Like, I almost to the point I'm like, I should just put some rockery around and say that's my dandelion garden. Like, I'm gonna but I was actually thinking probably the same thing. I guess it's easier to weed in the rain, is it? You're already like grumbly about pulling out weeds anyway, so why not just get soaked? But I'm not aiming too high. It's gonna be, I want to read this weekend a bit. I've got a couple new podcasts that I'm digging, so I want to listen to a couple episodes there. That's about it, man. I'm teaching myself a course, because I have to close out a course with a student, so grade 10 applied math. I'm gonna sort of teach myself the final unit about quadratics. there's a podcast unto itself. Yeah, I'm going to teach myself quadratics this weekend, so I'm comfortable with it.
Nah, I wish I never asked.
No, dude, but who knows? Maybe we'll get out for some food too. Teach your life, yo. Teach your life.
Oh, and we forgot to mention it's the long weekend. It's the May 2-4 weekend.
It is. So I'll enjoy an extra day.
Fair enough. Okay, buddy. Well, thanks again for an awesome chat. We didn't get booted from Google, so thank you to the Google gods.
Yeah, something's working.
Letting us do our podcast video today.
Okay, man.
Talk to you soon.
Yeah, we'll talk soon. Ciao.
See ya.